Blog Talk Radio.
For the political consciousness of Mr. Slick Pavlovich. My name is James E. King III, and we are broadcasting from out here in the sunny San Diego. Of course, some of my other panelists are from other different parts of the country, so they're not quite as, the recipient of Mother Nature, quite like we are out here in San Diego. But let's talk about some of the things that are happening and the reason why we're actually here tonight. And that's Obamacare or the lack of the Trump administration to appeal it. We're also going to talk about some of the other strange things that are happening. Mr. Scaramucci, of course, really strange bird here, not exactly sure what's going on. But before we get started, let me introduce our first panelist, Ms. Janet Rennell. Janet, how are we doing this evening?
Well, it's been quite a week, but I survived it, so I'm here. It's a lot to talk about,
Most definitely. Now, before we even get into the real crux of today's show, and as I said, I thought there was so many things that we had to talk about that I've extended the show an extra 30 minutes, and hopefully now we'll be on from 7 to 8:30 Eastern Pacific time. And yeah, the first thing that I really wanted to talk about today, I saw it earlier, and it really, really. Worried me, and I will say, you know, at this advanced stage, I find very few things that worry me, even less things that frighten me. But we have a federal judge nominee here, Miss Amy Coney Barrett, and she believes that all judges should be bound by their religious beliefs, not the law. Janet, have we smeared the line between church and state with the election of Vice President Pence?
I think we've destroyed it. That's one of the main tenets of the Constitution, was separation from church and state. I'm not sure how old everybody is, but I was really a kid at the time. When JFK was running for office, and actually was happy to see what I consider a young man compared to Eisenhower. I was like, oh boy, look, I could listen to this guy. And he had to say, I don't know how many times, I'm a Catholic, but I will never bring it into the White House, over and over and over, to reassure the American public that he will not bring his personal beliefs as opposed to the law. And I've got a lot to say about Pence, but I do think that I can't even imagine in my wildest nightmare a federal judge even saying those words. I mean, it's so insane. I don't see how, I can't say I don't see how that person can be confirmed because of the makeup of the Senate, but I think it's going to be a close one. But it's absolutely, it's just ridiculous. It just is so far away from the Constitution as it was written. I mean, not counting amendments. It's something that's frankly unheard of. Have you ever heard anything like that before from anybody?
Well, you know, I also remember Kennedy, you know, and the Ask Not speech. And I will say, although I found myself caught up in some of the fallout from that speech, it did ignite even in the ghetto. You know, this was a president, like you said. You know, even though you know we had had our own little differences between the Catholic Church and the Baptist Church and this and the other segments of religion. This was the one time when I think everyone was kind of united behind this very vigorous young president. And we were looking to get away from, as you said, you know, these dodgy old guys like Eisenhower and whatnot. And a lot of the young men of our generation, we felt that even though we couldn't identify with him on education and you know, power and so forth and so on. The fact that he was a young man and he reached out to our community was a great thing for us. But getting back on this federal judge nominee here, these were some of the things that when you heard a vice president speaking out against Planned Parenthood and really going back almost to puritanical type of rigid lines about exactly what is supposed to be what and how the Bible regulates, you know, our laws and as well as our daily lives. Now, you know, I think that, you know, once again, we have some lines that are being crossed here, even though there should have been a lot of red lights during the campaign process, even before, let alone the election. There were a lot of red flags that people either just decided to ignore or, you know, maybe I really don't know what to make of it, because supposedly this was a base that was formed of educated people. And it kind of, when you look at the demographics, you know, you would think that things had been certainly turned around as far as I believe this is one of the very few times we have had a presidential candidate that didn't bother to go through the Rust Belt and just assumed that they were going to get the vote. Well, you know, a lot of people assumed that it was all right for them to stay at home. But you've told us on many occasions about the work that your husband does. How does one even, you know, get to this point in their career when they openly espouse these type of beliefs? I mean, isn't there a process that an attorney goes through before they become a judge, where, you know, they have to, you know, kind of commit their beliefs before their peers? How does someone get that far?
Well, generally, you know, an attorney will practice for some time, and then they decide, you know, usually at the state court level, and they'll be a county court judge, a circuit court judge, and then they may be picked on based on usually, you know, I mean, not usually, but the president, and then some people do recommend to the president naturally. People that are, that they would like to see put into the federal court. I know too, for instance, and as a matter of fact, you know Congressman Alcee Hastings. I've known Alcee Hastings for I've known him a decade, and He was picked, and he was confirmed as a district court judge. He was a great judge. He was a fair judge, and everybody liked him. And he must have crossed somebody somewhere along the line, and they literally impeached him, which is almost unheard of. And he did nothing wrong, absolutely nothing. He had a friend who had done something, but it had nothing to do with him. And the Congress actually impeached him, and he felt his run for office, and he won. And so he's been in Congress ever since, and we still, you know, maintain a friendship. And he's beyond, like, he can't even believe that he's gone through. He's 80 years old now. He can't believe that what he's been through his whole life, and having risen to be a district court judge, and then wind up in Congress. And it seems to him that we're practically, in fact, that I would love to have him on the show one night. It seems to him like, what happened? You know, what happened to the last 50 years? It's just crazy. And I do, and I this is going to sound terrible, so I hope if any of the listeners are evangelicals, they don't hate me for this. But, you know, it's funny when they quote the Bible. Because what part of the Bible are they looking at? That's the part that I don't get. When it's convenient to go to the Old Testament where it can pick and choose, you know, that they do. And like you say, the Planned Parenthood, all different types of issues. Yet, if you're an evangelical or any Christian, then you would be looking what Jesus said. And I've never seen in my life, I've never seen so many people that are so judgmental of and sit in judgment of everybody else. But as you say, normally how the process is a person is usually they're a state court judge. Once in a while, somebody actually is so good that they do pick them to be a federal court judge. But they normally go to the state courts first, and then normally they're so good and reversed so few times that someone submits their name. Sometimes it's the governor that would do that. And then they're considered, and yeah, they do. They go through their opinions, they go through their cases, how they handle different people, all types of people, whether it's civil, criminal, whatever, and see if they have the temperament. And, you know, and then when they do become federal judges, it doesn't take too long to see which, if they're, you know, I hate to put it this way, if they're pro-government, let's put it that way, or not. And there's a lot of really fair judges. I know of one judge, he must be in his 80s or early 80s, but he's still as sharp as a tack. And he's on he's a senior judge now. He was a chief judge on the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals, Peter Shea. There was never a better judge. He was considered several times. They wanted to elevate him to the Supreme Court. He would have been a fabulous Supreme Court justice because he was absolutely colorblind, religious blind, everything. He was strictly the law. But and he would allow an attorney to argue in front of him and really let them have their say. So I did get to know him at one point before he was actually in the appellate court, and my husband practiced in front of him like forever. And he always said if I had my pick of judges, Pete Fay would be one. What's happening? I don't know. Now, where is this judge from? Is she from the? What state is she from?
I'm not sure. I didn't get that. I just got her name. Evidently, she has been through the whole state process because she's a federal judge nominee. So I'm thinking that she's been through the whole process. Usually we hear about judges, you know, I mean, you know, some are conservative and you know, I mean, as we considered, you know, this judge that we just got rammed down our throat, Obama let it go that way. But anyway, we usually think of judges, you know, being a conservative or progressive but as you said, you know, we want our judges to be independent with a clear separation in the Constitution.
That was the purpose of, in the Constitution, that was the purpose of making a federal judge appointed for life. So they wouldn't owe anybody. So they wouldn't, no one could go to them and say, like Trump did, like, you know, he's a Mexican judge or, you know, or the chief judge of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals is crazy. I mean, which is insane to even say that out loud. But, you know, the whole point of them being appointed for life was so they could think clearly and go by the rule of law and that everyone gets a fair shot. It's not supposed to be, well, you know, I'm pro-government, this guy's automatically guilty in a criminal case or whatever, you know, they're for big business because they don't have to worry about getting donations and contributions for re-election and all that. And that's why it was formed that way. So somebody like this, I pray that this person is not confirmed because it's so against everything. It's just so against everything. I mean, it's not to even with the Supreme Court, when they ruled with Roe versus Wade, they were just going using the law. And that's how they came to their decision. It wasn't whether they approved or disapproved, didn't approve. It wasn't whether they would do it or wouldn't do it or have a daughter or a wife or whatever, you know, that would have an abortion, let's say. It didn't. That wasn't the issue. The issue wasn't what they would do, and it's not supposed to be what they would do. It's what are we allowed to do? And I was really a little kid when, I don't know if you remember this, but I only remember it really vaguely, and it was horrible. Do you remember when they had the thalidomide babies, like so many years, oh my goodness, so many years ago? I was really a little kid. But I remember seeing it on like the cover of Life magazine or something. And I remember hearing my parents talking about it. And there was a lady, I think she was like in Arkansas or somewhere like that. Maybe Arizona. I think it was Arizona. And she was told by her doctor that she would have it, this child was going to be, you know, horribly deformed. And she wanted to have an abortion. And if she was still, she wasn't late term. And they said, if you have one, they're going to put you in jail. Now, I was a little kid, so I just remember my parents talking about this. And she went, I think, to Sweden to have the abortion. And they talked about arresting her and all that type of thing, but I don't think they ever did. But we've come so far from that. And the fear I have is judges like that, you know, we would be back that way. And I don't know if you remember this, but it was only a year or two ago that with the Zika virus, and the Pope of all people, the Pope said that any woman, you know, Catholic, I imagine, but he just said blanket, any woman that has a Zika virus and wanted to have, or felt the need, not want, but the need to have an abortion, it would be absolved and it would be okay with the church. And that shocked, you know, diehard, you know, anti-abortion people. And, but, I mean, here's a Pope, we're in 2016. I know Obama was president. And he was a Jesuit priest. So he really, that's what he studied the most. And the thing is that even he realized that things happen. You know, I mean, things happen. I know he's a little more open than the Pope before him, that's for sure. But the thing is that, just ironically, you know, Bill Clinton had appointed Donald Trump's sister to be a district court judge when he was in office, which is pretty interesting today, isn't it? And she doesn't speak to Donald Trump. And she ruled in favor of a late-term abortion for a particular case because of some circumstances. I don't know what they were. But she was actually weighing the law and I imagine the situation, whatever it was. So I can't understand where anyone feels, you know, that they can sit in judgment of somebody else based on religion, because everybody doesn't follow the same religion. Some people don't follow any religion. So a judge of all people, you know, that person should be, it's a woman, so I don't know what she should be, but she's probably evangelical, so I don't know if they have women ministers or whatever, you know, they call them. But it would be a tragedy if she's confirmed, and we might have to have a vote like last night on that one, because it's just crazy.
I have to ask you this, because you kind of brought it up, and I know it wasn't part of some of the things that I was going to talk about tonight, But when you look at right now at the makeup of the Supreme Court and the possible addition of another judge, you look at the makeup of the House and the Senate, and then you look at our administration. Do you think that if we let this orange-haired madman stay in the White House long enough that we could possibly see a repeal of Roe versus Wade?
Oh, God, I would hate to really think. I think it's possible if he serves out his term, it's possible we could see that. I'm hoping it's not. I'm hoping that no one else retires or dies or anything on the Supreme Court, because this Judge Gorsuch is everything that I thought he would be, and maybe worse. And it's just horrible. And I know that Justice Kennedy, I think, was thinking about retiring, and he was literally being begged to stay on, and so far he's agreed to. So I hope he continues, because it's scary. It's really scary. And they can wind up doing almost anything. I think if he winds up staying the whole 4 years, it's a real possibility. I have my gut feeling tells me he's not going to be there for 4 years, whether it's through resignation or impeachment or who knows what. But I think the makeup is. I was listening to someone tonight just talking about the makeup right now, and it's so chaotic that no one can remember ever any White House having this crazy of a makeup. It would be funny if it wasn't tragic. It's just horrible. And I have noticed about Trump is he has loyalty to no one other than his daughter, maybe his son-in-law, but his daughter. And I never cared for Reince Priebus, but you know, I say he kind of stuck with him the whole time, and then in comes this Scaramucci, and I mean he's not even officially hired, and yet he's in there, you know, firing people and removing people, and it's an outrage. It's just a mess. You know, to be honest, I thought in the beginning with George W. Bush, I thought that was going to be a mess after 9/11, and it did kind of morph into one. But this is beyond anything I think the country's ever seen. And there's so many areas that are just downright scary. I don't mean to be leaving, you know, one subject and going on to another, but I have to say that today this insane speech that he gave in New York, where he's telling the police, stop being so nice to these guys. Like, oh my God! Like, this is are you really giving permission to the police? You're giving permission to rough these guys up? I mean, it's just absolute lunacy. It's lunacy. And, you know, I told you about my husband, and my husband had sued before the civil rights movement. My husband was suing police departments and the FBI, and I mean, you name it. I mean, and he went after them and he won, and prisons for police brutality. I mean, for brutality in prisons and police brutality, and won because it was so outrageous. But this is something that is frightening. It's almost like we have a maniac. And, you know, I'm sure somebody that likes them won't like me much, but it's as though we have an insane person in the White House, and he's surrounded by pretty much insane people with him. Now, I know today today Priebus went, and last week Spicer went, and I don't know what's going to happen with Bannon and Scaramucci, because the two of them are like, you know, oil and water for sure. But I don't think that Bannon is giving in so quickly, but I'm not so crazy for him. But I don't know what, there's something very strange, to say the least, about this guy Scaramucci. Just came out of nowhere and, you know, came in slick, really just, you know, like to me, a casino host type. And, but seems to have the president's ear. Now, there's one issue that could have become a big blow up, and that's that he moved this General Kelly from Homeland Security to being chief of staff. And generally, Scaramucci would have to go through General Kelly in order to speak to Trump. And if you start saying to Kelly, you know, this man was a general, was in the service, was lifelong, like 40 years, or some 40 or 45 years. And if he starts going over his head, you know, he'll probably either just resign, or there's going to be some kind of giant blow up. Because he's not one to be pushed around, to be sure. On the other side of the coin, he's not a politician, so he doesn't know anybody any of the senators or congressmen, so he's kind of like a neophyte when it comes to that. It's quite a crazy thing. But I'm really afraid for the country because it's going 20 directions at one time, and you know, when you think about the threat of North Korea, what could happen with that crazy person? And God forbid we do have some attack of some kind from somebody. You know, where are we? You know, where are we? You know, everything is in complete disarray.
Well, you know, you're definitely right about that. And we could talk about, you know, from the latest naval boats and confrontation between Iranian naval boats and the U.S. Navy. We can talk about sanctions and how Russia has responded. Like you said, I mean, there's so many things that we could talk about, but it's kind of hard to talk about the rest of the world when we have so many domestic issues. Now, one of the things that people have been talking about, Senator Franken and a few others have already issued a warning to Trump about a thing called a recess appointment. Jenna, can you kind of break down to our audience what a recess appointment is and how the president can make this without the Senate being present?
Well, it's interesting because I've actually done some research on that, and it's got quite a history. A recess appointment is basically when the House and Senate are in recess and a position becomes open that needs to be filled, and the Senate that needs to confirm that individual isn't around. So the president makes a recess appointment generally, and then they can be confirmed as late as, like, for instance, there's one coming up in August. So if there was a recess appointment made, whether you liked it or not, technically, you wouldn't be able to, the confirmation wouldn't have to happen until the end of the year. So that person would have the whole fall to do whatever. And there's quite a history about it, because it's never really been that abused. Now, I actually pulled up some statistics or some information, and even it went back as far as George Washington made a few of them, and they never had any issues with anyone. And Reagan actually made 240 recess appointments, which was about 30 a year. George H.W. made 77, and there were no problems with his. And President Clinton made 139, and there were no problems with his. Now, with George Bush, he actually made 171 recess appointments. And what happened, and this is when things started to change a little bit, what happened is when the House and Senate recess, they both, you know, hit the gavel and they adjourn. And once they're both, they both have to adjourn for Congress to be adjourned for recess. So with George Bush, I guess he was putting in some people they didn't like that much, and they didn't want to wait to the end of the year to have to confirm them. And so what they did was they took his word, and they just made him promise not to appoint anyone during the month of August, and he didn't. And then they just forgot about it. And then Thanksgiving recess came around, and he appointed a bunch of people that they weren't too thrilled about. So they started thinking, what can we do about this? And they said, they came up with the idea, well, they just won't officially recess, if that's what it takes. Now, everything, you know, went along okay. They really didn't have any real big problems. And then when President Obama was elected, they really didn't want him to make any recess appointments. They really didn't. So what they were doing is, after he had made 32 recess appointments, which is less than 5 a year, and what they decided to do in 2011 was they didn't officially recess. They would just leave. The House would recess and say, you know, we're going to recess, but the Senate wouldn't. So he actually couldn't have any recess appointments, and that stopped him from a lot of different things. And through the rest of his term, the term that actually, because I'm going to read this right here, what would traditionally have been the 2011-12 winter recess is when they started that, and he couldn't do any recess appointments the rest of his term. Now, with Trump, because they're so nervous, everybody is so nervous, Democrats and Republicans, that he may fire Jeff Sessions, even though I don't think I have to say how much we're not crazy about Jeff Sessions in general. We know that Trump wants somebody to fire Mueller, and that other, the deputy, I think it's Rosenstein or something, he won't do it. What they're all afraid of is he's going to fire Sessions and then put somebody in there as a recess appointment. So what they're going to do is they're going to do that. They're not going to officially adjourn the Senate for that month, this month of August. And they're even going to the extent of having a skeleton Senate. They may not be there every day, but they either live in or around Washington. So they're right there to stop that, so he can't do it. because they really are afraid. You know, they know it's not the. It's not like we wouldn't want to be rid of Sessions, but not before Mueller is done. So, that's what it's about. And up until, I'm not sure what Bush had done that they did that to him that one time, but and it's obvious with Obama. You know, they you know, I have to laugh, and it's not funny, but I mean, I have to try to laugh when I hear Trump saying this is an obstructionist Congress and all this, and I'm thinking, you can't be serious. Not after the six prior years, that was absolutely insane. So everybody is afraid. So you know, as I say, Republicans and Democrats alike feel the same way about not recessing, formally recessing. They're going to go back to their states, but a few of them aren't. They're just going to be, they're going to stay in the Washington area in case. And actually, the ironic part is that Obama actually challenged that. He actually challenged the recess, you know, about them doing that, and they said, no, they can do it. Well, now there's a precedent that was set, and they can't turn around and say, well, that, you know, that's not fair, because they can cite the Obama case to say why it is fair. You know, turn around is fair play. So in a way, it's in its own little skinny little way, it's a good thing that happened, where he did challenge it. You know, it was almost like when they had the lawsuit against Bill Clinton. You know, no sitting president was ever sued civilly or criminally, you know, while he was sitting. You know, they would just stay the case and that was it. But with Bill Clinton, they went ahead and they let Paula Jones sue him, and you know, we all know that whole story. So now, if there's a civil action, I think even criminal, there's a precedent that set by Bill Clinton that you sued him while he was in office, and now we can sue you. So sometimes, you know, they have to be careful what they wish for, because it can come back and haunt them at another, you know, another administration, another a change in administration. But to go back to what we were talking about before with the whole makeup of the White House right now, it's kind of really scary. I mean, it's really I think that Priebus was about the only one that knew anybody in the Congress itself, and even Kelly, like I said, Kelly's good, but he's a military man, and he's never done anything political. And my understanding is that McMaster is even getting fed up because of this whole announcement this week about the transgender thing with the service. And it's like what? You know, when he said he spoke to so many of his generals and other people and what have you, and he didn't even speak to McMaster. So, you know, some of the few normal people or people that really know how to run a country are getting fed up. So I expect to see more people leaving, and I don't know what's going to happen. But I also have a feeling that, I mean, I don't know anything for sure, naturally, but I have a feeling that Bob Mueller is working. I know he's working 24/7, and I know he has 30 of the top attorneys in this type of field working with him. And I think it's going to be a sooner than later thing with him, because it's out of control. You know, the whole situation is completely out of control. But anyway, to answer your question about the recess appointment, that's basically, no, it was originally put into the Constitution for a convenience thing, never thinking that, you know, it's going to be, I'll wait till they, you know, they go home for the month, and then I'll put in, you know, 100 judges or or something like that. As we've all seen, the Constitution has been I'm looking for it lately. Like, where is it? I'd like somebody to read it in the White House and try to understand it. Actually, I don't know if you've been listening to Richard Painter, who I never even knew who he was before, but he was a White House counsel for George W. And he's just appalled. He's actually filed a couple of lawsuits against Trump for some of the things that he's done on behalf of the people. And I guess he lives in Virginia, so he's doing it for the state of Virginia, so he has standing there. But he's so outraged. And here he was, a White House counsel for a Republican administration. And it shows how it's just beyond comprehension, really. I mean, everything is just bizarre.
talk a minute about the skinny bill and the teeth. First of all, we saw Senator McCain come back to the Senate to make sure there was a 50-50 tie and that we would get a vote on the bill. And I think at that point that everyone was kind of thinking, well, you know, the Republicans will find a way, to find a way to push their bill through. And we had heard about some controversy from a lot of senators, but none that we thought would actually come out and openly vote against Trump. The vote happens. First we have the administration threaten the Alaskan, the senator from Alaska.
Extortion.
He threatens to take away, the pro bills that are for Alaska and whatnot. And then we see she still votes against the bill, but then surprisingly, when it's time for McCain to cast his vote, and after being in long discussions, not only with the president but with Mitch McConnell, he turns a thumbs down.
I don't know
whether you they've replayed it over and over on TV.
I watched it last night. I watched it. I couldn't take my eyes off it.
Were you surprised when he did it?
McCain is an interesting guy. I agree with him about half the time, and half the time I don't. But I've never noticed him to be party first, really. Now, I know in the afternoon when they were talking about, this is just going to be to let this thing go through to open it up for discussion. And then he said, and he was really clear about it, but so was Graham. And, those two are like inseparable. And they said they wanted assurances, real assurances, from Paul Ryan that the House would take this to conference and they would really be, real debates and change things and add and take away and all that type of stuff. And otherwise, he couldn't go with it. But if he had a solid assurance from Ryan, then he would go with it. So I kind of thought, oh my God, because I'm figuring, well, Ryan's just going to tell them what they want to hear, and then do what he wants to do, and there's really nothing you can do about it. And I don't know. I don't know if they had a private conversation and he wanted it in writing or something and they wouldn't give it to him. But when Graham said yes to it, I was thinking, oh, no, because if he says yes to it, you know, then I think we're cooked. And McCain really, boy, I mean, they were on him. I mean, you saw Pence on him and McConnell on him, and they walked outside, and it's rumored that Trump called them, and, you know, like, this is something you have to do. But I did hear him say he'd been talking to the governor of Arizona, I don't know how many times yesterday, a lot, and asking for his input because it's his state. And as bad as, you know, they need to do something in Arizona, they sure, you know, this skinny bill was really skinny. And he just felt, I didn't hear him say, I don't trust Ryan, but I really believe that he didn't. He didn't trust him, and he didn't come all the way back to Washington after having, you know, my goodness, brain surgery and all that he went through. I mean, this man's really been through a lot, and to come back and do the wrong thing. But I fully expected him. I really did, especially the way they were cornering him. And then I saw him walk over to Dianne Feinstein and put his arm around her. And I kind of almost thought maybe he's consoling her. You know, maybe he's saying it's going to be all right. And, you know, they promised me that we're going to have this go to conference and all this whole kind of thing. And I couldn't see her face. I couldn't tell what her reaction was. She didn't look, except from what I could see, I couldn't tell whether she looked happy or sad or anything. And then when he went over there, and I don't know if you noticed, if you saw that, when he left, he walked outside. So he wasn't there when they first called his name. And then he was basically the last vote. So when he said no, I mean, I could see one thing. I think I saw Mitch McConnell go from white translucent, because I thought he was going to faint. I mean, he just... I gotta tell you, if I could jump through my television, I probably would have hugged McCain, because I thought to myself, you know, I guess they don't call him the Maverick for nothing. And then, you know, I heard him talk about it a few times, and he said he spoke a great number of times to his governor Ducey, and it just couldn't do it. It just could not do this on an IFCOM, you know, and what's going to happen then kind of thing anyway. And he just felt he had to vote his conscience. He had to vote for the people. And I think that's the first person I've heard say that, you know, and I don't even know when, you know, to say that he was really voting his conscience and voting for the people. And I just, it was just, you know, that was just amazing. If you're watching it, the gasp was amazing. You know, I've never heard a gasp like that. And I've never really watched these things that go all the way through from beginning to end. But, and it's quite a process. And I thought they'd never be done. When he did that, I was just like, well, boy, thank God you survived this one, McCain, because he did the right thing. And, you know, now, you know, and then even when Chuck Schumer did get up and say, you know, it's not a celebration. It's relief, but it's not a celebration. You know, they've got to get back to, as McCain put it, regular order, where they sit down and they talk to each other. It's not a us versus them thing. I mean, in Congress, it shouldn't be that way. You know, I'm, you know, old enough to remember a lot, but I'm old enough to remember, you know, when I started really paying attention, you know, the bills that were like the McCain-Feingold, and, you know, a Democrat and a Republican would sit down and they'd knock out a bill and they'd sit and work on it and then they'd present it, and, you know, and they were great bills. They were great, and it turned into great laws. And it's really, it got like that a little crazy during the Clinton administration when he lost the House and Senate and it started turning that way. But of course, you know, with Obama, I mean, he had a feel, you know, he never showed it. I mean, he's an amazing poker face. But there's got to be a few punched walls in that White House, because if it was me, I'd be taking an axe to the wall for some of the things that were just so simple and easy and would have helped the country, and they wouldn't do it. So it's interesting over such, you know, for a span of time, just looking at how things, you know, things can maybe work out. Now, let's say, for instance, that somehow, some way, the Democrats and Republicans actually start acting civilized and really start working on bills that help the country, the whole country. Then will Trump sign them? That's the big question. Should he still be there? You know, that's the thing. And then even I think he's far more dangerous than Pence, but I think Pence is a horror show for us domestically. I think that's a horrible thing. But you know, you were saying before about the not going to certain states and kind of assuming that, you know, they would go, you know, Democratic. And honestly, it kind of scared me, to be honest with you. It scared me because I listened, if I can stand anymore, I listened to some of the rallies that Trump was giving or whatever, spewing. And there, aside from winning, everything else was hate. Everything was hate. And I thought, you know, he is really appealing to the worst of the people, you know. And I thought to myself, why do these people have so much hate? I mean, realistically, why do they? I don't understand. I mean, no one here took their jobs. You know, I mean, they can't. The jobs that maybe Hispanics will do, that nobody else wants to do or will do, they won't take those jobs. So, I mean, I don't understand, like, where this hatred comes from. And it's maybe because I don't have it. I just don't understand it. But I do remember, and I think this could have been a 60-minute segment or one of those shows, when Obama was president and he had won his second term and they went down to an area of Mississippi, and these people were so poor. I mean, they were poorer than poor, and yet they were against Obama. They were against Obama. And I thought to myself, why? This man can really help you. And you just it's just this thing, you know, it's this mentality. And it's so hard for me to really understand it. I just can't understand it. And yet, if you listen to the rallies he's rallying now, Trump, which is crazy to me. But, I mean, because, you know, if you recall, you didn't see Obama on television every day, all day. He only went on television when it was important. He didn't just break in every 10 minutes to say something or anything or talk about how great he is, or he's the best president ever with the exception of Lincoln. Well, imagine Lincoln got a pass. That was amazing. I really thought, you have to be insane to say this. You know, who could say this? But the Rust Belt
already put himself on Mount Rushmore, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, he said it, and then I think he realized that may have been like a bridge too far. And he said, if I meant that, you know, they'll have that, the Washington Post, the New York Times will have it on the front page that Trump thinks he should be on Rushmore. He probably does think he should be on Rushmore. I mean, It's insane. I mean, and then I did hear Chris Matthews, who I like a lot because he's a pretty hard hitter. And he had said if there ever were another president to put up there, he would like to see Kennedy up there because he actually had worked in the Peace Corps and all that. But I don't think we're adding anybody anytime real soon. But it's and certainly won't be Trump. But I think I don't understand the mentality really. And I understand, okay, in West Virginia, in Kentucky, when Trump was talking about the coal mines and he's going to open the coal mines again, and you know, a million people are going to get jobs from that. And I do know that, as crazy as it might sound, because everybody thinks Hillary is just this perpetual liar, she knew that wasn't going to happen. And I know she didn't want to go and lie to those people. So she did say that she wasn't going to reopen the coal mines, and people would be trained to put up, however they do it, to put in solar power, and so that they would not be unemployed the rest of their life. And, you know, I guess once a coal miner, always a coal miner. But I think in that regard, and I don't think she wanted to go and say, you know, we're going to bring back steel mills and we're going to bring this back and we're going to bring, when it's not true. You know, it's really, really not true. And I don't think she really wanted to go and just lie to these people, you know, outright lie to them and know it in her heart. And so she says herself that maybe she was wrong. Maybe she should have gone there. But at the same time, she didn't want to go and say, you know, it's all going to be okay. You know, like everything's coming back. And the irony is that I did hear, I'm trying to think who it was, that was saying that a lot of the jobs that might come back at some point, they're going to be jobs that they actually have robots. I mean, even the car assembly and things like that are done mostly by robots, or robotically done. And that is one guy that
of course they are. We could have told them that in Ohio the Chevrolet plant went to robots and put most of the people that we thought that were going to be working for generations, put them in the unemployment line. But speaking of the unemployment line and some of the most bizarre things that have came out this week, the president actually changes military policy with a tweet.
I know.
According to Donald Trump, transgender are costing the military too much money, approximately a little over $400 million, I believe it was $4 million in health care. Trump says this is just too much for our military to have to bear, even though he's definitely saying that he's going to give more money to the military, but he wants it to be for weapons and things. But how do you, you know, after, you know, he went down to Florida and made this big speech about Pulse and about how to get along with the LGBTQ community,
right,
and how things
right.
were going to be different between him and the, you know, the Republican Party and the community, and now to tweet this when they're, you know, we basically under Obama we went from, you know, don't ask, don't tell, to now we openly have these people some in very high places, you know, I mean, you know, of command. How do you reconcile this man's mid-morning tweet with, you know, I mean, what does this do for the morale of the troops around the world?
Well, I think it's terrible. I know Mattis, I don't know where he is. I think he's on a vacation somewhere, but I know he didn't speak to him first. He didn't master. They're both generals. He didn't speak to Kelly, who's also a general. He didn't speak to anybody, even though he said he spoke to all his generals and people. You know, my people, my generals, and my everything is his. And everybody said he never spoke to them. So obviously he didn't speak to anybody. I don't know where these things like pop into his head that he would just arbitrarily and just pick numbers, which are not even true. And they don't, and he had said something about reassignment surgery. They don't do reassignment surgery. If you're, you know, when you sign up as you are, they're not going to do reassignment surgery for you while you're in the service. But one of the, I heard this, I'm not 100% sure it's true, but I had heard that one of the men that were in SEAL Team 6 that killed Osama bin Laden was a transgender man. Now, frankly, I don't care, you know, what they are. I mean, they got Osama bin Laden. I'm good with you, you know? And apparently, you know, this is not a problem with anyone in the service. It's not like they're being inundated with complaints and all kinds of crazy things. So I don't think, from what I understand, they're not spending any more money on them than they are on anybody else that needs health care. And it's, you know, and they have to do what they have to do. And these people are signing up, and they could very easily be killed, you know, I mean, which he wouldn't do. So, I mean, 5 deferments is a lot of deferments for a bone spur in your foot and then go play baseball. And yet, you know, to all of a sudden out of the blue sky come out with this, it was really crazy. And then I had heard, which is this is something in the area of Sessions that I don't like, apparently there's some lawsuit about, oh my goodness, there's something to do with being able to, that hiring the LGBT community is not discrimination if you don't want to. Because they're not a race, they're not a religion, so they don't fall into that category. And so Sessions, or one of his, you know, people, wrote a brief to file, you know, to try to stop that and turn that clock back. And I'm thinking, well, what's next? Housing? You know, I mean, it's just, I don't get it. I don't understand where this constant, and all, the only thing I can think of is really hate. I mean, do they really believe this stuff? You know, this is what I don't understand. It's almost the same as with that whole situation with the baker that didn't want to make the wedding cake or something like that, and then he had to make the cake. And I thought to myself, well, you know what? If I knew that a baker didn't want to make my wedding cake, I don't want him to make my wedding cake. You know, I'll just go to somebody else anyway because I wouldn't trust the cake. But it seems like it's almost like we're in Back to the Future movie, you know, and we're going back to almost the 50s in some cases because some of the things that are said, and I even hear women say them, and I'm like, you're kidding, right? I mean, you can't be serious. And they are. I mean, it's really bizarre, and I don't understand what they want to do, what they want to really happen. I mean, let's say they were somehow, I mean, to deport all these people they want to deport. You know, those people are doing really important jobs. And they may not seem important, but they're important when they're not being done. Years and years ago, I had a mentor that I really liked a lot. He was really a very, really nice man. He was a good man. And he said to me one time, we just got on a discussion, and he said, I just want to tell you one thing. It was just a thought. And we were talking about different types of jobs and levels and what have you. And he said, you know something? Everybody should be respected. This is a great guy. Everybody deserves respect. Everybody's a human being, and they deserve respect. I don't care if he's picking up your garbage. I don't care if he's flying. He's in a rocket going to the moon. It doesn't make a difference, because without them, how would we even exist? So everybody is important. Everybody. And so don't ever, ever, I mean, I hadn't done anything, but we just got into this discussion. He said, don't ever, ever disrespect anyone. And he had met, and this man was quite a luminary in his own right, but he was a really good man. And he met the original Sam Walton. And he was like, wow, I met Sam Walton. And Sam Walton felt that way about him. And Walmart was nothing like it is today, but it was growing. And he had said to him, he told the man that I knew, his name was Richard McEwen, who was really something. And he said to him, he was so honored to meet him, and he was so honored to meet him and all that stuff. And then he said, you know, all I ever want, this is Sam Walton. He said, all I ever wanted to do was make a store that everybody could shop in and could afford to shop in. That was all I ever wanted to do. And, you know, I got very lucky. I've been very successful. And then he died. You know, and then after he died, you know, the kids took over, and I'm not even sure who owns it now. But, you know, it's not, obviously not the same as a good man trying to do a good thing. So I just wish sometimes I could get into the head of some of these people and just like, tell me what is bothering you. Why is bothering you? Because I don't understand. You know, I just don't get it. I really don't. And as far as Trump, I mean, he did a complete 180 as far as the whole gay community. And because if you remember, he had the flag and he was doing all that. And I even heard Caitlyn Jenner. I don't have a whole lot of sympathy for her, but you know, I heard her talking about it, but not doing anything about it. And it's just, I just don't understand why it matters to anybody else. You know, I mean, it's do no harm. That's my thing. It's just like today, the president's saying to these police, oh, you know how you put your hand on their head when you go into put them in the police car? Well, don't do it anymore, and things like that. And these police were laughing and thought it was very funny. And in my mind, I said to myself, more police are going to be killed this year. Because I would be terrified to think that I got permission from the president. You know, because they're already, in my mind, they're already out of control. And it just continues and continues. And this isn't a sign of, I'm not in favor of gangs. Who's in favor of gangs, you know? But I don't know anything about this gang he's talking about in New York. I never heard of them, and they're allegedly using machetes or whatever. I don't know what's true and what's not. And I'm sure if they are, the other side probably have machetes as well. But and he wants to put 10,000 police.
Actually, the gang that he's talking about has much more influence out here on the West Coast.
Really?
Probably, Southwest. MS-13, if you're out here, if you're close to Mexico, you certainly heard of them. It's actually a scare technique. It's not like we don't have black gangs, other Latino gangs. We have prison gangs. We definitely have a gang problem. Just like anything else, it can be used as a tool of paranoia. This is exactly what this president is using it for, especially when I believe he's looking to have part of this budget designated for the wall. So where else to start, setting up that paranoia then along, the border with these Mexican gangs.
He was saying he wants the budget to have 10,000 more police on Long Island in New York. I'm like, 10,000 more police, really? To stop this, because it's become killing fields. It wasn't killing fields when I was up there. There weren't fields when I was up there. Way back, the island was pretty empty, but it hasn't been empty in a long time. So I'm not too sure where these fields are. But, I imagine it could make you nervous. I once was in New York with my daughter. My daughter was only like about 17. And we were down in Little Italy, Little Italy where it kind of goes right up to Chinatown. And we were both, it was about 10 o'clock at night, and we were walking down the street, and there was about 8 or 9 Chinese guys at the end of the street. And they looked kind of like, I don't really think I feel like walking through there. I mean, it's just me and my daughter. So I just thought, like, just not to have a problem of any kind. We walked across the street and went to a store and looked at some stuff, and then we walked down the street the rest of the way on that side. And they didn't bother us. But I thought, let's not invite any issues and be walking into the middle of a bunch of men, that are hanging out in this corner. And that's like, I was, I was completely opposite. I was crazy.
Sometimes it's just common sense, like you said. You don't put yourself in that type of situation if that's the way you feel. A lot of times, like I said, people, want to cry wolf or they want to have that situation occur, so they put themselves in harm's way. Now, that's not to say, there aren't bad apples in every bunch, but, sometimes there is such a thing as common sense. We've talked a lot about health care and about, Donald Trump says, hey, just let it die out there, and we've heard about how it's supposed to be so costly. What happens if Obamacare doesn't implode, Jen?
I've heard other congressmen say it's not really going to implode. There's areas that do need some help, but. And they're also scaring the heck out of these insurance companies, because these subsidies that are supposed to like kind of pick up the slack, they're getting worried: are they going to get paid? Not from the people, but from the government, the part that they're supposed to subsidize. And so that's a reason that some of them and a lot of them maybe are pulling out. And it's not in all the states, but it's. There's a handful, But they're really, you know, every time they say it's in a death spiral and it's doing terrible and everything else, it really isn't. And I know, I don't know a lot of people on it, but I know a few. And I don't know if I mentioned this to you last week or not, about when my daughter was out of work. She was out of work for 3 months, and, you know, she wanted health care just in case. So, and you're supposed to have it. And believe it or not, she first went off to Boston from Texas, and they turned her down for Romney Care. They still have Romney Care up there. And they turned her down. I'm like, well, how can they turn you down? She said, they said I didn't need it. I'm like, okay, well, whatever. So she came down here, and she stayed with me for, you know, a couple of months, 2 or 3 months, until she was going to stay in Florida. And it is really, I mean, Florida is terrible for employment. So she wound up going back to Texas. But in that three-month period, she got Obamacare, which is the Affordable Care Act, which a lot of people don't even know. So she had to pay something like $222 or something a month. And apparently that's, I don't know how they formulate those numbers. It's something about like how much you made and how much whatever. I don't know for sure. But I do know that in that 3 month period of time, she wound up having to go see a couple of doctors. And then one thought she might have, they wanted to do like a little biopsy, and they did. And they sent her to some outpatient place, and they did it there, and she was fine. You know, thank God she was fine. And so in that 3 months, it cost her $666. But then she had, you know, she was employed again, and she gets her health care through her work, and she pays for it, but I don't know how much. But the thing is this. Even she said, wow, if I didn't have that, either I wouldn't have gone to the doctor, and who knows. I mean, she felt something that she felt the need to go. And how much would that have cost if I had to just go and pay a doctor and then go to the other one and then have the biopsy, and then thank God it came out all right. But, you know, let's say, you know, how much would that have cost? It would have cost a fortune. So she's a proponent for Obamacare. And she's surprised when people think it's different than the affordable. They say, well, we don't want Obamacare. And she said, well, what about the Affordable Care Act? And she said, oh, yeah, well, yeah, we might be interested in that. And it's like, oh, my God, you know, really? I mean, it's just sort of crazy. And I think that's another issue in and by the way, my understanding is that some of those states, like Kentucky and West Virginia, and those states, those people – let me tell you, it's praise Obamacare, because if they didn't have it, they have nothing. They have nothing. I know you're in California these days. My brother was in the Navy, and he was stationed in San Diego for a while, for a couple of years. He loved it. You're sorry when they moved him. But I went out there and visited him. And I needed to go to a hospital to have some stitches taken out of an elbow. And I went in, and I was real young. And I just went in, and I said, well, how much is it? And they said, well, nothing. And I was like, nothing? And they said, yeah, when you're in California, this was, you know, way back. But they said, when you're in California, you're considered a resident the minute you cross a state line, you know, in that regard. And I was like, wow, what a friendly state this is. I don't know how it is now, but, you know, and he loved it. He lived in California a long time. He went back there after the service for a while, with Northern California. But it's amazing, and it's scary that there's such lack of education to these people. But a lot of them don't even want to hear it, and I think that's the bigger problem, is they don't want to hear it. I mean, imagine if they just took it away, like they wanted to just repeal and replace in 2 years. So, I mean, of course, that would have been a nightmare from every direction you could think of. But what was it like before? I mean, don't people remember what it was like before? You know, when all people could do is go to an emergency room. I mean, it's just crazy. And the other thing about it is I heard someone say today that when they did do the Affordable Care Act, they worked 17 months on that. And it was in and out of committee after committee and changes and revisions and a million different things before it was finally passed. And while, you know, sure, I'm sure it needs improvement. So you have something is working and it can be improved. So work on improving it instead of starting from scratch. I mean, imagine if someone were to say, we're repealing Social Security and then we're going to come up with something different. I'm going to tell you, you'd see a lot of people out there really, the Grey Panthers would be out there, I'm telling you, because you can't do that.
What about the Republicans paying back the money that they took from Social Security? How about that being a start?
Exactly. And you know, that word, I hate.
No one wants to think about it for some reason.
When they say entitlements, that drives me crazy. That word just drives me up a wall. Because it's like, well, don't act like you're doing everybody a favor. They've been paying into this thing their whole life. They didn't have a choice. No one said, do you want to pay Social Security or not? Yeah, they didn't say that. It was gone. It was gone. It's out of your check. It's gone. And for people like my husband, he had he didn't have an employer, so he had to pay both sides of it. And that was about, I don't know, 18% or something. And my dog's talking now. But, this is something like even with Medicare, I mean, people are paying into Medicare for decades now. And, so they're entitled to it. I mean, and I don't mean entitlement, but it's theirs. And they shouldn't be using that money for anything else. And all I hear about is increasing the defense budget, and getting bigger and more aircraft carriers and more submarines and more destroyers. And, really, I don't think we're in that bad a shape when it comes to that. Or some of the things that they have screwed up on, like they went back years ago. Going back even to Reagan, I think he ordered some kind of plane or something that never flew. But it's just, I don't know what, in a way, I don't understand what makes some of these people qualified to even make these decisions. They don't personally have any experience in them. I don't think...
I definitely hear what you're saying. Haven't been around, right around the same generation. It makes me cringe. I've never ever wanted to host a political show. People always say those are things that you don't talk about, religion and politics. But when you see the world for want of a better term and debate myself, when you see the world going to hell in a handbasket, sometimes you think that you at least would like to, at least throw some water on it. I mean, you might not have a hose, but at least contribute a couple buckets of water. Janet, unfortunately, some of our younger crew weren't able to make it tonight. Hopefully, Luann, Linnell was week, along with Nodge. He did tell me he had to work tonight, but Hey, as usual, I'm glad to spend some time talking about politics with you. Why don't you tell everybody where they can find you on any of our social media, and give everyone your final thought for this evening.
Well, I'm on LinkedIn and I am on Facebook. I don't do too much tweeting, but I do a little bit. And my final thoughts for tonight. I think we had quite a week, to say the least. The good thing was last night Obamacare, or Affordable Care Act, has lived to see another at least a few months or years, hopefully, and maybe when the Congress reconvenes, maybe they will really sit down and do what they used to do. Thinking back to even when Joe Biden was in the Senate, and he was always, or even Hillary Clinton. I mean, they reached across the aisle, they sat down, they worked things out. And I would like to mention one thing before we do go. If you remember, when Obama had the Gang of Eight, which was four Democrats and four Republicans, to talk about the immigration, and they worked a long time, and they did work hard, and they came up with a bill that he was really satisfied with. And I think the Senate was satisfied with it. And he said, if that reaches my desk, I'll sign it. And it got killed in the House. So it proves to me that there's still hope, that there are still people that understand. And it seems like it's the older ones in a way, although some of them I wish would retire. But my hope is that when Congress does reconvene, they actually sit down and start thinking in a positive direction, and start thinking about, what we sent them to Washington for, and we sent them there for us, not for their party, not for, a particular thing, but to make the country better. And safer and everything else. And I hope that by next week, I'm almost afraid to think what might happen in the White House in 1 week. I mean, anything can happen, for sure. It's been quite a week. So I think I'll kind of leave it on that note. And I look forward to next week. And perhaps 1 week, I might even, if you don't mind, I might even put my husband on. And he might give you some real insight, which
no problem whatsoever. We'll be glad to have him on. Any guests that you think might want to come on, all you have to do is just let me know, and we'll definitely make sure that we'll make the appropriate arrangements. So yes, no problem with that at all. So thank you so much, Janet. And we thank our audience, and we look forward to talking to everyone next week. So have a great night, everyone.
Okay,
we'll
great. Thank you. And have a great night, too, and a good week. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.